This is a special presentation from Florida Public Radio and WLRN Public Media in Miami. I'm Tom Hudson. Today, a conversation with one of the Republican candidates running for her party's nomination to be Florida's Attorney General, Ashley Moody. It is a statewide election. Her competitor, Frank White, declined our invitation for an interview. Moody was interviewed by me and the editorial page editors of the Miami Herald, the South Florida Sun Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post. We began by asking her to introduce herself and explain why she is running for Attorney General.
My name is Ashley Moody. I am seeking the office of Attorney General. I have been raised in a family dedicated to the rule of law. My father and grandfather were judges. I served as a lawyer out of law school. I went to the University of Florida. I have a degree in accounting, a master's of accounting and law degree from the University of Florida, and a master's of law in international law from Stetson University College of Law. I started practicing law with Holland & Knight. I did litigation for business and thought I was going to be a civil litigator until I retired, and ended up in federal court one day and saw a federal prosecutor in action, and really was moved by what he was doing on behalf of his country. And I applied to be a federal prosecutor under President Bush at the time. I moved to Jacksonville to take that position, prosecuted guns, drugs, and fraud cases in Jacksonville, transferred to the Tampa office of the United States Attorney's Office and prosecuted drug crimes, international and domestic drug crimes. Became a judge in 2006, served on the bench over a decade. I'm the wife of a law enforcement officer, a DEA agent, a cop before that. And we are both firmly committed to supporting the men and women in law enforcement, ensuring that they have the tools and resources they need, not only to complete their mission successfully, but to keep themselves safe.
Hi, I'm Nancy Ancrum. I'm the editorial page editor of the Miami Herald. Why are you the best candidate for this position?
You know, over the course of my career, I have had experience in practically every facet in which the Attorney General will be responsible. I have experience working with federal and state prosecutors and law enforcement. I was commended for my lead of investigation. I was commended for prosecutorial excellence. I am the only candidate running that has worked alongside law enforcement, completed investigations, successfully prosecuted cases, both with state and federal law enforcement. I am the only one running in this race that has prosecuted a case, running to be the top prosecutor in the state of Florida.
Pam Bondi. She and consequently the governor have been accused of politicizing the office. Can you talk about the degree to which you feel the need to be the general counsel to the governor as opposed to the constituents of this state? How will you comport and configure this office?
Let me tell you why I believe I'm the best candidate. And this is similar to when General Bondi entered the office back in 2010. She was a prosecutor. She was not a politician. She said, I have watched this within the court system. I know I can make a difference. I'm going to run for this office and offer my experience to the people of the state of Florida and watch me, watch my results. And when she came in, we were dealing with a pill mill epidemic. And I don't need to describe it for you down here in South Florida. And this was ground zero for many people taking advantage of prescriptions and prescription opioids. When she took office, 98 of the top 100 opioid prescribing physicians were in Florida. 98 of the top 100 in the nation were in Florida. She immediately got to work working with law enforcement, using her experience. By 2013, they had reduced that number to 2. There is no question that she has been a strong, unwavering leader for law enforcement and what they need to accomplish their missions, and even in some of the most difficult criminal justice issues. We have seen a transition because of the success they had in the pill mills. We have seen a transition in the dynamics that we're facing on a drug front. But a lot of that is due to the success that she had. And again, I go back to when she came in, she had been in the criminal justice system the majority of her career. Now, we came to this position and are running for it at different routes. of course, I started doing civil litigation and then moved to being a federal prosecutor and then was on the bench. But we bring with it a perspective from being in the trenches, seeing these issues up close and personal on a daily basis for our careers.
Ms. Moody, my question was not to put Pam Bondi on trial, really.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was talking about my background.
Right. We understand your background. But I was talking about, I want to get to the partisanship that seems to have been introduced into this office under Pam Bondi. For instance, at the RNC convention, and again, this has nothing, this is not a political statement at all. However, to lead a crowd in lock her up, this is during the campaign, that seemed to be an unseemly amount of partisanship introduced by a state attorney general. Your constituents will be red, they will be blue, they will be independent, they will be relying on you to protect their best interests. Can you talk about the degree to which you really are able to do that outside of the political spectrum, politics aside?
Which is why I am running. You know, when I am traveling the state, what I'm talking about the most is having someone who is respects the rule of law and will defend the Constitution. Pam Bondi has done that, and I believe she has done that admirably. And I am talking about my priorities, which include fighting this opioid epidemic, where we continue to lose 15 people a day. You know, the numbers that I've read show that we lose more now than we did at the height of the AIDS epidemic. I am the only one running who has prosecuted a drug case. I'm the only one running that's prosecuted a case, but let's just talk about the drug epidemic. I'm the wife of a DEA agent. I am committed to tackling this problem, and I am in the best position to do it. Now, I am not naive. I don't think that we can arrest our way out of this. I believe that we will have to tackle this epidemic using education and addressing addiction as well. But I can lead a statewide effort to do that using numbers, using experts, and I've worked with people and effectively led not only investigations, but organizations and projects to address issues in our judicial system. And I have a career of showing that I am successful when I put my mind to it. I'm also talking about elder abuse. We lose 1 in 10 seniors will be abused, I think the statistics show, whether that's physically or financially. You have to have someone at the helm of these investigations and these task force that get that this is going to take experts. It's going to take people that understand that this isn't always a civil matter, that sometimes we have to attack criminally fraudsters and scammers that are going against our most vulnerable.
I'm Rick Christie, editorial page editor of the Palm Beach Post. While you mention elder abuse, while I got it on my mind here, what would you have done differently in the wake of what happened in Hollywood following Irma, when with the deaths of, I believe, 12 people have been attributed to that now? What would you have done differently as Attorney General in the wake of that?
Well, the Attorney General is limited by jurisdiction to subject matter within under statute, and also whether something crosses jurisdictions and from one circuit into the other.
What I'm talking about is the entire industry, that whether or not the industry itself needed to be looked at, whether or not the AG at that time would have taken a position of, okay, we need to take a look at what's going on in our nursing homes throughout the state of Florida to make sure something like this doesn't happen again.
I believe every leader in the state of Florida is going to work to the best of their ability, and certainly you have my word to make sure that this doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a tragic event, something that with our rising senior population in Florida, we want to make sure is never repeated. And I can tell you, I am not in the office right now. And if anybody comes in here and tells you that they know exactly what evidence they're looking at in terms of how to proceed, you should be very skeptical.
I wasn't speaking about that. I'm basically trying to get an idea of how much scrutiny would come from the AG's office in a matter. You brought up elder affairs. Okay, and so, and elder affairs, as you say, is an issue here. There are people, elderly people being scammed constantly in this state and so on. But when you brought that up, it made me immediately think about what happened in the nursing homes, and the regulation of our nursing homes and ALFs in the state of Florida. So that's why I asked you, what would you have done in the wake of that?
Well, you would want any leader, and I know that Attorney General Bondi feels the same way, that we want to make sure that we take actions to make sure that those are responsible are held accountable if, in fact, it meets the elements to proceed forward in a case and it's under our jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. And certainly, I believe the citizens of the state of Florida should expect that from their leaders. This is one of my priorities.
I'm Rosemary O'Hara, the editorial page editor of the South Florida Sun Sentinel. What about the issue of Obamacare? The Attorney General's office is pursuing some case against Obamacare. Would you continue to pursue the challenge to overturn Obamacare?
I believe the action that you're referring to was the one in past February where they are trying to ensure that particular law is found to be unconstitutional because of recent actions with Congress. I want to kind of back up and offer maybe a broader perspective. Regardless of how you feel, and I think we can all say we want people with pre-existing conditions to be able to get insurance and have health care. I don't know that anybody would say otherwise, and certainly leaders in Florida. But what I think the action does is say, look, the way it stands right now, it's unconstitutional, but that doesn't mean ultimately our leaders shouldn't figure it out and get it together and pass a law.
So you believe that the law, Obamacare, that the U.S. Supreme Court said was constitutional, Justice John Roberts was the deciding vote on that, that because of recent actions in Washington and Congress has somehow made the law unconstitutional now?
And I believe that's the basis of the action.
And you believe that's true, that the law is unconstitutional, even though the Supreme Court has said it is?
Well, after this most recent action, when the mandate was walked back, originally the one vote was said it was a tax, and now the mandate's been walked back, and the argument is that it's no longer constitutional. And I would continue in that litigation, but that doesn't mean that our policymakers shouldn't ensure that those that have pre-existing conditions shouldn't have access to health care.
Palm Beach County, where I'm from, is actually having a major problem with this human trafficking. And so I'd like to hear how you would approach dealing with this issue.
Well, this is not going to be a one community.
I agree.
But
you
are.
You did say you're going to be the state's top law enforcement officer.
Oh yes.
So okay.
I just wanted to say, what is really going to make headway on some of these issues? And again, this is not the time for Florida to have a politician babysitting the post of attorney general when we're trying to make headway on opioids and elder abuse and human trafficking. What I would presume, the attorney general already works with a human trafficking organization that's determining where we are in terms of incidents and what we are doing across the state to combat this. There are new technologies that are being used with groups across the nation that I would like to begin using on a broader basis in Florida. We've started using them in some counties already. Pasco County is one specifically where we're partnering with some organizations to use technologies and internet to identify those that are involved. I believe that federal and state coordination, not only in investigations, but in taking on appropriate loads of prosecution, is going to be needed. And, I am fully prepared to make sure that we follow up on what we've already improved on, identifying the symptoms when human trafficking, when people, not only law enforcement, but those in the general public see human trafficking going on, but taking it to the next level, which is how do we on a broad basis in Florida use the resources that we have available to attack this, both human resources and new technologies that are evolving.
Do you support Amendment 4, which would restore voting rights and other rights to ex-felons?
I believe that process needs to be streamlined. I don't specifically support this amendment. I believe it goes too far.
How so?
Well, it does not it would automatically restore rights to numerous violent felonies. I would support streamlining the process, including automatic restoration of rights for certain non-violent, less serious felonies. The complaint and the opposition right now really comes to what we're seeing in a backlog of trying to address cases. And so I would be grateful for the opportunity and would welcome the opportunity to examine that process so we can bring those numbers down, which would include an automatic restoration on certain crimes.
If a violent felon has completed his or her debt to society, probation, prison sentence, why not automatically restore those rights?
You would be talking about armed robbery, kidnapping. I mean, there are numerous violent felonies that I believe.
But if they've paid their debt to society, why not automatically restore their rights?
Because I believe each of the certain cases need to be specifically reviewed. I believe that when you're trusting people to consider whether laws are broken and consider who's going to make our laws, we want to make sure that those are the people that should be given the opportunity to do that after a careful review of their cases.
What criteria would you use?
Well, you know, the same type of criteria that the cabinet looks at now, but I would try and enumerate out a specific list. I mean, that would have to be done after
a cabinet member use as a criteria, how many baby mamas do you have?
Exactly.
You know, so, I mean, that's why we're kind of asking you seriously, as a circuit judge, someone who actually appreciates the law, what criteria would you be looking at?
Well, you're going to look at what they have done to show that they can be responsible and law-abiding citizens in the community. That's very important, and that's what we want to know. We don't want to know this isn't going to be somebody that's going to recidivate and be back in the courts. We want to be able to trust them with these important things that we're going to expect of them. And we would list out, and I would be willing to be on a committee that went through and examined what types of criteria that we would want to consider. But, you know, again, I have been a judge for over a decade. I have been a federal prosecutor. I am extremely protective of our system and that it is a strong system because it is not only fair, but it is perceived as fair. I believe that is what makes our country great. I believe that is what has allowed our country to be a strong one and survive, you know, as long as we have. I mean, we have outlived the majority historically of the world's great empires, and I believe that's because we have a system under the rule of law that people believe in and believe that is fair. And I would want to make sure, as a leader and as a guardian of that, as Attorney General, that I had a say in ensuring that this process was seen as something that was deliberate, mm-hmm. Laid out, that due process was given, and that people could trust that it was making those that were making the decision were doing so in a way that had carefully laid out criteria and it was done in a fair and unbiased way.
You think
I have a career dedicated
to
that.
Do you think they should feel that way now, that it's done in a fair and unbiased way? Would you tell voters right now that we have a fair and unbiased way of dealing with clemency right now in this state?
I believe that we have a process to do that. I believe that there's a
backlog.
Is it
fair and unbiased?
There is a fair system. I believe there is a backlog, and I believe we can improve that. And I will work to do that if I'm given the chance to be Attorney General.
Okay. What's your stance on the Stand Your Ground law? Has it worked as originally envisioned? Has it been effective?
You know, I support the Stand Your Ground law. I think it's a good law. It ensures that people who defend themselves, that right to defend themselves is codified, and there's ability to present that and be immune from prosecution within our system. You know, I support it, and I think that it's working.
There are some who believe that it is a license to murder. When you look at some videos, when you hear the stories of what actually happened, that So perhaps the shooter was not in imminent danger and pulled out a gun, the most recent case in particular from Clearwater. Does the law, do you think that the law can be interpreted as a license to murder?
I think the law lays out a framework with which numerous stages within a process, it can be examined whether someone was reasonably defending themselves. You know, there the stages would include that the time of arrest, the time of incident, I should say, at the time a state attorney's office and a team there reviews the case to determine whether or not it is going to be filed and charges filed, whether that's done through the state attorney's office internally or through using a grand jury process. And then at the time when a judge reviews at a pre-style trial stage at a hearing, presumably that would be done by a judge, and then again at a trial stage.
In the Clearwater case, the sheriff has declined to charge the shooter, and the state attorney's office has said they're investigating. As a former prosecutor, have you ever taken charges against somebody where law enforcement has declined to take action?
Law enforcement files reports on incidents routinely without making arrests, and a state attorney's office can charge that. And that's why I was being very careful to make sure that I was clear on the different stages, because one of the things that I bring to the table in this role is an ability to understand and communicate these steps and these stages, because I've been there. And that's why it's so important to remind people that the state attorney is the next step. There is no reason to believe right now that the ultimate decision has been made either way. And what's also important to remember is while there may be a video out there, there is all kinds of other evidence that has been taken and they are reviewing. And that decision will ultimately be a result of a very deliberate, reasoned, thoughtful process. And I want to make sure that everybody remembers that this is a system that ultimately goes through numerous checks and stages before the ultimate decision of guilt is made. And so we need to remember that and remember that the process is underway right now.
The bill had on revision last year. And before, the defendant had to prove that they were acting in self-defense. Now the bill has changed to force the prosecutor to prove that the shooter was not acting in self-defense. So the burden has shifted from the person who killed somebody to the prosecutor saying, you did not act in self-defense. And prosecutors, you were a prosecutor, were against that change. Do you support that change?
I support the burden shift in the sense that, you know, I've seen it play out, and moving the burden to the prosecution when you're moving in alignment with many other pretrial issues where you're dealing with constitutional issues. I'll just give you an example. We oftentimes deal with pretrial issues as it relates to the Fourth Amendment when we're dealing with search and seizure. And that's a prosecution burden. This moves it in line with other pretrial issues. And again, ultimately, at the end of the day, there is a jury that will have to determine the issue of guilt and innocence. And I supported the burden shift. It should be the prosecution that proves guilt.
That was Ashley Moody, one of the Republican candidates running for her party's nomination to run for Florida Attorney General during the general election this fall. The second Republican candidate for Attorney General during this primary election, Frank White, was invited to sit for the interview as well, but he declined the invitation. Moody spoke with WLRN Public Media in Miami and the editorial page editors of the Miami Herald, the South Florida Sun-Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post. I'm Tom Hudson. This has been a production from WLRN Public Media in Miami and Florida Public Radio.